Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening once again to the Hour of the Time, and I'm your host today, Michelle. We will be continuing with our review and search through the Basic Training Handbook of the American Underground tonight, part 3 in the series. So without further ado, get pencil and paper by your side, and we will continue after this short pause.
Sometime in October, we sailed to the moon shore. When we sailed into a raging storm, like I've never ever seen before. And all of the crew, they were brave men, but the captain, he was braver. He said, "Never mind the ship, me boy, none of the ships can save us. Let her go down, swim for your life, swim for your children, swim for your wife, let her go down.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are people in our country today, clothed in Patriot garb, who would have you believe that there is nothing that you can do, that our struggle is a hopeless one, that it's already over. They are lying to you. It is not over. It is not hopeless. We must have the personal courage of our convictions and beliefs to stand to the very last, no matter what that last may be. People without hope are people without a plan. If you have a plan, if you have training, if you have options before you, then you can continue to stand and to move and to achieve in this struggle that we are engaged in. And this is why we are taking the time to review this basic training handbook of the American Underground. We left off in our last episode discussing personal security, and we are at this moment in phase 3 of the Underground training program. I will continue. We could discuss the techniques of shadowing, wiretapping, and photographic surveillance, etc., but all this will be taken up later as part of the technical tools of espionage and counter-espionage. Good personal security is not so much a matter of technical skill as it is a certain frame of mind, a proper mental attitude. Here are some general guidelines. 1. The successful espionage agent will develop the habit of stopping to think about what he is to say before he actually says it. A slip of the tongue may mean his life. He avoids idle chatter and casual conversations because experience has proven that it is during such times as these, when his guard is down, that the individual agent is most apt to give himself away. There is another good reason why every member of an anti-communist organization should avoid loose talk. Each of us must strive to develop the qualities of leadership that will be required of us in the fight that is ahead. One requirement of leadership is to hold the respect of your associates. It is truly said that familiarity breeds contempt. It might be added that nothing breeds familiarity quite as fast as a long, rambling, useless conversation. The federal government can and does tap telephones without a court order. Right now, there are 11 different agencies of the United States government that routinely use telephone monitoring in their contacts with ordinary citizens. And I might remind the listeners that the material I am reading to you is approximately 35 years old. There are many more agencies at this time that routinely monitor the telephone calls of their contacts with citizens. And there has been legislation passed allowing the FBI to do phone taps without a court order. I continue. He must be cautious in his use of the mail. For nearly two centuries, the mail of American citizens has been considered to be their own personal business. The contents of first-class letters mailed in one part of the United States for delivery in another part were strictly confidential. Several years ago, the Postal Department began a practice known as a mail cover. A mail cover for any individual or company may be requested by the Justice Department, Selective Service, Internal Revenue, or many other government agencies. This simply means that the post office keeps a record of all persons to whom you send mail or from whom you receive mail. Still, this was done entirely from the address or return address on the outside of the envelope. During the past year, the government has adopted a new attitude toward first-class mail. They now contend that all mail, while in the possession of the Postal Service, becomes the property of the Postmaster General to open, read, or reroute as he or his agents may see fit. The principles of unit and personal security. Security is often thought of as secrecy, but this doesn't tell the whole story. Many things have been shrouded in secrecy and at the same time lacked real security. The best example of this is the Manhattan Project during World War II. It was so secret that most of the people who worked there didn't know what the project was about or what they were trying to do as a whole. But on the face of this great shroud of secrecy, Russian intelligence agents cracked the security of the Manhattan Project and thus walked off with the secrets of the atomic bomb. Number 1. The Principle of Deception. Quote, "Complete deception is indispensable to the success of these covert operations." End quote. That is from Colonel Virgil Ney, writing in Notes on Guerrilla War, published by Command Publications in Washington, 1961, page 18. Quote, "In the first condition of being a resistance member and maintaining normal and usual attitudes and characteristics, the basic requirement is to be a good actor or pretender. In addition to some histrionic skill, this condition calls for quick wits, ready answers, and often high mobility." End quote. That was by Ernie O'Malley, quoted in Army Without Banners, Adventures of an Irish Volunteer, published in Boston by the Houghton Mifflin Company in 1937, pages 148 and 149. 2. The Principles of Classifying All Information. Information means all communications, whether spoken or written. It is anything about the personnel, movement, aims, objectives, and means employed that would aid the enemy. All information should be classified into one of the following five groups. In most all cases, these five groups would serve the needs of the underground organization. Class 1, Top Secret. This security classification is reserved for the most important records and communications. Records carrying this classification are available only with consent in writing, signed by at least two different members of the Security Division of the Underground Unit. Communications of this classification are to be read only by the person or persons they are specifically addressed to, and then destroyed. This classification should be reserved to only the most important information, where its interception might result in the death of some member, or where vital plans, programs, or data would be compromised. Care should be exercised that this classification is not used needlessly, otherwise it will lose its value. Class 2, Secret. This classification is used for records, communications, and information relating to current organizational activities, plans, or personnel. Secret communications are to be in code if given over the telephone or by mail, unless it is certain that both the sending and receiving addresses are secure. Otherwise, they must be delivered in person or by courier. Class 3, Restricted. This is the normal classification for advanced training materials and routine organizational correspondence. Class 4, Classified. This is used for preliminary training material, correspondence to provisional members, and literature not meant for public distribution. And Class 5, recruiting literature and similar public information, non-classified. Number 3, the Principle of Obedience. All members must abide by the rules that are adopted by the underground organization concerning security. And this also includes the classification that any information is assigned on the national level. Before any band makes a public statement, writes a letter to the editor, or any other public manifestation, it should be cleared through a chain of security officers. This could be county security, district security, state security, regional security, and national security officers. To keep the red tape to a minimum, the national and regional security officers could furnish the state security officer with guidelines and allow them to make some of the decisions on the local level. In all cases, the lower levels of command must abide by the decisions made in higher headquarters. If anyone disobeys, they jeopardize all involved. 4. The principle of continued inspection. Why continually inspect? Because people change. The biggest thieves are usually trusted with very large responsibilities. The trustworthy person of today may be dishonest tomorrow. Proof of the above is seen in every embezzlement case. Not only do people change, but places, things, and measures change in their security value. Give any halfway intelligent espionage network enough time, and they will crack the security of any organization that does not continually inspect its people, places, things, measures, and systems. Eternal vigilance is the price of absolute security. These principles are true for both sides. 5. The principle of avoiding attention. One way for an individual, band, or movement to die a quick and sure death is to attract undue attention to itself prematurely. The most effective underground movements are unknown to the enemy until they have enough strength and support to inflict damage to the enemy and to sustain their continuance. Quote, premature commitment is the finest help the resistance can give the enemy in his effort to liquidate those who would fight. Regardless of the temptation to rush into combat with all that is available in weapons and manpower, this desire must be resisted. End quote. That's from Travis Ingham, quoted in Rendezvous by Submarine, published in New York by Doubleday, Duran and Company, 1945, page 61. Quote, in other words, the ability to keep out of the clutches of the enemy's secret police or agents is the first primary mission of the resistor, insofar as basic personal security is concerned. That's also by Colonel Virgil Ney, Notes on Guerrilla Warfare, published by Command Publications in Washington, 1961, page 154. Number 6. Principle of fluid change. This is best seen in often changes in the locations of meeting places, weapons caches, and so forth. This same principle can be applied to an organization. Think of a local organization as a cell with different members. The enemy intelligence finds out that the cell in question exists, but before they can penetrate the security of the cell, it becomes non-existent by using the principle of change. This is done by using a shotgun type of scatter technique or splitting the cell to form other cells with the same and additional functions. It is not necessary for all members to change locations. You see this principle in operation every time a covey of quail scatters. The idea is to scatter, reorganize in different groups, and reach functionability one step ahead of the enemy intelligence. This principle is necessary because if given enough time, proper intelligence can crack the security of any organization. It means to remain fluid, so old security measures must be constantly replaced with additional new security measures that are just as effective and better than the old ones. Number 7, the principle of time. Unless these conditions are adopted early in the life of the movement and continued, the chance of the resistance survival is nil. Conclusion. There are three words that describe the elements of a sound security program: system, supervision, action. System. A security program is on the right track if procedures are outlined and made clear to all personnel. Each member must be trained to work the system involved. Above all, their enthusiasm must be kept at a high peak. Supervision. Nothing runs by itself except that which is going downhill, and even that must be supervised or else it winds up in the ditch. The best system in the world is no better than the attending supervision. Action. All personnel must be alert to the problems. All must know what to do and what not to do in regard to unit and personal security. the program cannot be limited to the leaders of the underground or to the bands involved. The whole membership of the underground organization must be enlisted to action. Sometimes this action must be directed against offenders. Firm enforcement puts teeth into a security program. The conflict will not be won on the security front by observing one or more of these principles. All must be followed diligently. And even when all of this is done, we still must remain alert 24 hours a day. Remember, it is he who lets his guard down first and most that loses the game. We have remarked above on the efforts being made to determine the identity of our members by use of mail covers and similar actions. How can we counteract this interference with our right to openly and safely use the United States mail? Certainly not by appealing to the postal inspectors. We've tried that. Certainly not by the protection of our federal postal laws. Our only effective means of protecting our right of privacy is to rely on the 7 principles of security that we learned in our basic training program. To review, the principle of deception, the use of fictitious names, of letter drops, the use of innocent appearing letters, of postcards that carry our messages in hidden codes of ciphers. 2. The principle of classification, use of the most secure methods of communication for the most important information. Use less secure methods for less important messages, rather than flood your secure lines of communication with unimportant material. 3. The principle of obedience. Do not risk the loss of a secure means of communication by careless or lazy action. 4. The principle of continuous inspection. Continuously recheck on the security of your communications. Do not continue to use a means of communication after it may have been compromised by lack of proper inspection. 5. The principle of avoiding attention. Do nothing that makes the outside of your envelope look conspicuous. If you use tape or wax to help seal your letters, these should be on an inside envelope where they will not attract attention. Patriotic slogans or stickers should never be used on letters containing confidential information. 6. The principle of fluid change. Do not continue to use the same fictitious name, address, or other deceptive means so long that it becomes stale. 7. The principle of time. Prepare secure addresses, secret letter drops, and lines of communication well ahead of time, so they will be ready when needed. Practical security measures. 1. Use deceptive measures. Subscribe to one or more left-wing periodicals or get on the mailing list of some peace movement. This will keep the postal inspectors guessing as to which side you are really on. While doing this, underground members can be of great assistance in searching this left-wing literature for names and addresses of fellow travelers for intelligence files. People are desperately needed to assist in this activity. If you are interested in this field, please inquire for further information. 2. Always use 2 envelopes in sending mail to any patriotic organization or to any other member of our underground organization. Do not put a return address on the outer envelope. Put your return address on the inside envelope with the words Return Postage Guaranteed. 3. Place some opaque material, such as tin foil, carbon paper, or some similar substance between the inner and outer envelopes to prevent your mail from being read by infrared cameras. 4. Send all letters from corner mailboxes or from post offices where you are not known. 5. Be careful in the use of the telephone. Avoid telephone calls to a headquarters or to known members of the organization as much as possible. 6. prepare telephone codes ahead of time for future protection. 7. In recruiting new members, always learn as much as you can about the prospective recruit and make sure he is not an infiltrator before you identify yourself as a member of the organization. 8. Members of the underground organization in each area should be divided into 4 groups. A. Those who have been identified publicly or by law enforcement agencies as members of the underground. B. Those persons not known as members of the underground, but who are generally known as being patriots. C. Those persons who have kept their political beliefs hidden. And D. Members who profess to be liberal for the purpose of infiltrating enemy organizations. All members should be very careful in making contact with persons in a different category than themselves. For example, people in Class D should be very secret in their contact with persons in Class A or B. Each member must respect the security of every other member. Do not, under any circumstances, identify one of the organization, even to other members, without his expressed permission on each and every occasion. 9. Avoid loose talk. Do not discuss organizational plans in public places where you could be overheard. Do not even hint at such a discussion in the presence of non-members. 10. Do not write patriotic letters to newspapers or magazines under your own name. To do so achieves very little except to identify you to the enemy. 11. If you are already known as a patriot or as a member of the underground, you may find it advisable to spread the rumor that you have become disillusioned with the right wing, or for you to pretend a gradual loss of interest. 12. Classify your various members' addresses, your communications, and your other activities as top secret, secret, or confidential. Use your most secret lines of communications only for the most important messages, rather than flooding them with unimportant material. 13. Demand obedience to all security measures from all members. Persistent disregard for security measures should be cause for disciplinary action. 14. Check your lines of communications from time to time by sending phony messages to make certain they are not intercepted. 15. Change mail drops, meeting places, etc. frequently. 16. Prepare secret rendezvous points, mail drops, etc. now that may be used in time of some future emergency. 17. Each band should assign some member the rank of security officer and should set up a system of fines or other penalties for failure to comply with security precautions. 18. Observe the need-to-know rule. Each member should be given only that information which is needed by him in the performance of his duty or which he will need in cooperating with other members of the band. No member should feel left out because he is denied such information. Instead, every member should willingly avoid information which he doesn't need. 19. Be careful that you are not followed in going to and from meeting places or in making contact with other members of the organization. And 20. Keep all records and correspondence carefully hidden and in a manner that they can be easily destroyed. Records should be kept in code whenever possible. And we will return to the training program in just a moment.
Thank you.
You will need precious metals in the coming conflict, and you will need precious metals to survive the economic collapse that is sure to come. We are now ready to enter Phase 4 of the Underground Training Program. This is the final phase, and it is lengthy. We will not finish it today. We will continue it in the next episode. Phase 4 deals wholly and specifically with propaganda. Any action on the part of one group which is calculated to affect the thinking of another group may be considered as propaganda. The Germans used the term intellectual warfare. In the United States, the traditional term is psychological warfare. The British used the term political warfare. In the USSR, all warfare is considered political, and the communists brought popularity to the word propaganda in referring to the German efforts in this field during World War I, and to an even greater extent during World War II. Only the enemy is presumed to use propaganda, and thus the word has developed the idea of falseness, while our own psychological warfare is always assumed to be the truth. For briefness, we will use the familiar term propaganda in most cases. The best propaganda always has some grain of truth in it, something which the audience will readily believe and from which their mental processes can be guided in the desired direction. Propaganda may, of course, be entirely true, but maximum advantage is gained for its originator by proper timing or by accenting certain facts and neglecting others. The term propaganda comes from the word propagate, which in this regard means to travel along chiefly under its own power. A newspaper cannot travel by itself. For the contents of a newspaper, or even a radio broadcast, to reach maximum distribution, it must be passed on by word of mouth from one person to another. Thus, propaganda becomes fully effective only when its message reaches the level of a rumor. In this manner, its continued propagation is assured, and it will ultimately reach a far greater number of people than those who saw or heard the original message. The use of propaganda is a science, and to use it most effectively, several things must be considered. 1. The purpose of the propaganda. 2. The audience to whom it is directed. 3. The means by which it is to be delivered. 4. The motives to which it appeals. 5. The purported source of the propaganda. 6. Propaganda intelligence. 7. Propaganda security. And 8. Production. The propaganda purpose. There are many different possible objectives of propaganda: to improve the morale of one's own troops, to spur friendly civilians to greater productive efforts, to help make the people willingly accept the hardships of war, to convince our people of the justice of our own cause, to build confidence in our own organization, to sustain belief in our political system, to develop contempt for the enemy, to convince non-committed neutrals that we are right and our enemies are wrong, to convince neutral troops that our side will win and that they should join on the winning side, to demoralize the enemy, to destroy the enemy's confidence in their leaders, to convince the enemy that their ultimate defeat is inevitable. These are but a few. Most important is to decide in advance exactly what effect is desired from each particular propaganda message and arrange all other factors toward the achievement of that end. The purpose should be kept simple and realistic. The audience. Careful consideration must be given to both the desired audience and the actual audience which will be reached by a given propaganda message. There is obviously little to be gained by urging the citizens of Brazil to vote Democratic, or in urging the citizens of Japan to vote the straight Republican ticket. The audience selected must be able to react in the desired way, so as to achieve the propaganda purpose. The message must be designed to achieve the desired effect in those people that it actually reaches. If a propaganda message is to be most effective, it must be directed at a specific audience. 1. At the enemy, to convert, to confuse, to destroy morale, to misdirect. 2. At neutrals, to recruit, to gain support, to prevent them from helping the enemy. 3. At our own people, to boost morale, to build courage, to develop a fighting spirit with confidence in victory. Means of delivery. Some of the various media which can be used to carry the propaganda message are as follows: television, radio, newspaper, magazines, books, pamphlets, leaflets, handbills, gummed stickers, posters, billboards, loudspeakers, novelties, air writing, motion pictures, mail, public meetings, rumors, demonstrations, and telephone solicitations. Television. This is perhaps the most powerful media available for propaganda in the United States. Tests have shown that more people will believe a piece of news told them by a TV commentator than if they read it in the newspapers. The communist socialist conspiracy has infiltrated the television media deeply and is using it with great skill in promoting a subtle version of the communist line. The opportunities for American patriots to use television in giving our side of the story are very limited. The expense of even a few minutes of time on a major television network is prohibitively expensive for most patriotic organizations. Even if we could afford a reasonable amount of television time, the effect would be small compared to the considerable periods of time which the other side receives free or sponsored by liberal-leaning advertising. The money could certainly be spent better in other ways. Occasional guest programs offer some opportunity for patriots to get free television time. Past experience has proven this to be a generally poor bargain. Spliced TV tapes, improper lighting, biased moderators, and a host of other tricks can be, and generally are, used to make the patriot guest look absolutely ridiculous. Newspapers and magazines. These are the second and third most potent vehicles for propaganda within the United States. Like television, they are largely controlled by the communist-socialist conspiracy. Newspapers are somewhat more susceptible to local control, as they are more dependent on local advertisers for their income. Considerable tact is required to gain the cooperation of advertisers in this respect. If approached in the wrong way, most of them may spring to the defense of the offending publication. This does not mean that we should completely abandon all the most powerful media to our enemies. Patriots in each major city should either join or form a chapter of the Committee for Responsible Journalism. These committees monitor local TV stations and newspapers, making note of particularly bad propaganda programs. A list of all the advertisers of such media are compiled with their addresses and telephone numbers. Repeated telephone calls to the editor or program director, as well as the advertisers, should include firm but courteous requests for retractions of false statements or for equal time on controversial issues. Care should be taken not to alienate individual newspaper publishers, journalists, radio announcers, and so forth by rudely denouncing them. Most may be liberal, but few are actual communists. Many can be influenced by courteous and logical persuasion. Well-written news releases about local patriotic activities will frequently be carried in even the liberal papers if presented in person to the city editor. Radio. There has been a big change in commercial radio during the last few years. Less time is devoted to live programs, more to recorded music. With this change, radio has dropped in potency as a propaganda media within the United States. Many patriotic organizations and individuals are spending considerable sums of money on radio programs at the present time. Unfortunately, the actual value of such programs is frequently reduced by a lack of proper research and through careless presentation. Some stations carry audience participation, open line programs, where listeners can phone in and air their views. If planned properly, a campaign to use these programs can be effective. Each call by a patriot should be thought out in advance. To be most effective, all the aspects of presentation, motive, continuity, specific purpose, etc. must be considered. Care should be taken not to offend the radio announcer conducting such programs. To the contrary, effort should be made to gain his sympathy for the pro-American cause. Some members who are amateur radio operators have tried talking back and forth between each other in hopes of dispensing pro-American information to others that might be listening in. Experience has shown that the audience that can be obtained in this way is not worth the time and money involved. For our organization, at this time, radio must be reserved as a means of communications. In case of future communist takeover, some of the more powerful communications transmitters might be converted to other frequencies for clandestine propaganda purposes. Motion pictures. The motion picture industry is also heavily infiltrated by communists, with many of the most famous writers, actors, and directors having known communist affiliations. There is little we can do in this regard except to boycott the shows that include the most brazen propaganda. Organized picketing and distribution of handbills in front of theaters showing such films might also be effective, but this must be done either by persons whose political beliefs are already known or in such a way that the identity of secure members is not compromised. Some private films, such as those produced at Harding College, are excellent for showing to small private groups and civic organizations. Printed material. Small printed items, such as leaflets and booklets, make up the biggest current media for patriotic propaganda. For this reason, they should be given special care so far as printing, artwork, etc. is concerned. This will be discussed in detail under the heading of production. Mail. The U.S. Postal Service is currently the principal means of delivery for patriotic literature. Mail has certain advantages, such as flexibility, comparative certainty of delivery, speed, and so forth. Generally, it is more expensive per thousand members of the audience than magazines or newspapers. There is a real science to direct mail advertising. How to reach the right people, how to gain readership, how to produce action, how to test the effectiveness of small mailings before going to the expense of large mailings, how to compare relative expense with relative effectiveness of first-class mail versus third-class mail, how to attract special attention to your mailing pieces, how to increase believability of your mail message, how to acquire an effective mailing list and keep it up to date. Several good books have been published on direct mail advertising. At least one can probably be found in your local library and should certainly be studied before spending any amount of money on mailing patriotic literature. Demonstrations. Picketing, peace marches, and similar public demonstrations have been effectively used by the more radical left-wing elements. Such demonstrations serve as a primary media to distribute their message. Secondarily, they serve to gain publicity for the group by putting on such demonstrations. For the communists, picketing serves both as a media of propaganda and as a method of mentally conditioning their own people to further action. These tactics can and should be used by patriotic groups. Posters and billboards. Political posters such as are tacked to telephone poles are so commonplace as to have little real value in a political campaign. When used in other ways, they can be reasonably effective. Some of the posters, such as Wanted Khrushchev and the anti-UN posters, received considerable comment by those who saw them, and the message was repeated in many newspaper accounts of the mysterious posters that were put up during the night. Per dollar spent, few right-wing propaganda campaigns have ever had so wide an audience. Well, we're at the end of the hour, folks. We'll need to put this on hold. And join me again for the next episode of The Hour of the Time, in which we will continue our discussion of the Basic Training Handbook of the American Underground. Good night, God bless you, and God save our Republic.